It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Man, I'm so excited. Why? I have no idea. Just sometimes you wake up and it's just an exciting time, and it's great to be here. I'm just ecstatic that I get to do what I do, and I appreciate everybody's feedback and help, and it's just an exciting time. All right, so plugging a video that's coming out today. I think it's just an hour or so from launch time. I did a video where I broke down some of the tactics that Donald Trump is using to be so persuasive. So whether you like the guy or hate the guy, you got to say he's doing something right. He's got some big numbers. So I went through a bunch of videos, spent hours putting this stuff together, and there's four tactics that he uses most commonly, four and a half really, but I broke it down into four tactics that he uses to be unbelievably persuasive. And so this video is coming out. Make sure you check out on my YouTube channel, YouTube.com/Bert J. Martinez, and you'll see this video. It's going to be a killer. You're going to love it. And the great thing about it is you don't have to be a political candidate to use these persuasive tactics. This is stuff that you can use in the boardroom or as well as in the family room. It's good no matter what you're trying to do to get your message across. So check it out. All right. Exciting, exciting show. My first guest today, Lisa Bodell. Lisa Bodell is an award-winning author, CEO of Future Think. As a futurist and expert on change, she has helped literally thousands of senior leaders ignite innovation at Google, Pfizer, Lockheed Martin, and more. Lisa is an inspired speaker who has brought her message to over 30 countries and nearly 100,000 people each year. Her new book, Why Simple Wins, will be released this October. Can't wait to talk about that as well. Lisa Bodell, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bert. I'm really glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, too. You know, it's I cannot wait to dig into the subject matter because I think change is one of those things that people have a funny relationship, meaning if it's good change, hey, it's a surprise. If it's bad change, then it's, you know, then sometimes they're the victim or it's a tragedy, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and it's funny because change is the background of what I came from with my business. Let's teach people innovation and change. But people say that they want change, but only if it's positive. And unfortunately, you don't know that. You don't know that. So change can be good, change can be bad. There's just ways to approach it. But what gets in the way of change can be a lot of different things. And that's what I'm excited to talk about as it deals with a lot with simplicity and complexity getting in the way.
Well, you know what? And that's one of the things that got me excited as well, because I think that this simplicity thing sometimes is overlooked. It seems like, and I want to dig into this because I think your research, by the way, your research has found that people had trouble with simplicity, right? Is that true?
They sure do. It's the same thing as with change. Everybody wants to simplify, and I think there's some obvious drivers of that, right? You experience this every day. It's the globality of everything that in terms of people experiencing the world on a larger scale. It's technology. You know, the joke that everyone says, has technology been a friend or foe? The answer is yes. And it's a lot of other things that have come with that technology. And what the result is complexity. So everybody is feeling this overwhelming need to have more balance and, frankly, to not have more but have less. But it's hard to do. So that's the key message here is I don't want everyone thinking it's easy to simplify. There are easy ways to start, but I'm not going to be that person that's going to sit here and go, it would be an easy thing to do within a company. There are certain ways you have to go about it and certain ways you have to think about it to really make it stick.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely correct. Depending on the size of the organization, simplicity can be very complex, right? I mean, you look at the military. I've had the pleasure of working with the military, and this is a massive, massive bureaucracy. And
that's right.
Simplicity is sometimes not something that they're,
not accustomed to.
Accustomed to. Thank you. It's just like, wait a minute. Yeah, you know, we can't go from point A to point B. There's got to be a bunch of stuff in between. So absolutely right. And not to overplug my video that I was just talking about, but you know, one of the things that I think that has made Donald and other speakers persuasive is that they do try to keep it simple. The simpler the idea, the easier for you and I, the general public, can understand it and say, yeah, I like that, or yeah, I don't like that.
That's right. And I think what common things that hold people back, which we should talk about, but it's also understanding why you want to do it. And for me, the reason we want people to simplify is so they can get to work that matters. So if you want to get to the things that matter, you have to get rid of the things that are getting in the way. And that's the problem, is that we get into this status quo, this routine that gives us this false comfort, and that creates the complexity. We actually create the old monster that we become a slave to very often without realizing it.
All right, so let's dive into this. First of all, what is your take? Why is it so hard for us to simplify? Is this just something that has evolved over time? Do we think we're more sophisticated by being more complex? What's your take on this?
Well, it's interesting. So there's the external factors that you can't control. Those are things like, again, the global reach, right, in terms of expansion, technology, et cetera, regulation, compliance. All those things sometimes are put upon us. But the reaction we have internally, and I'm speaking within organizations now, there's also personal factors. But within the organization itself, usually complexity happens with very good intentions, right? We have the best intentions to simplify things, to put a process in place, to make things orderly, to explain things. And by doing that, we tend to build on what we already have because that's easier than starting fresh. And we tend piling on top of each other so we create this monster, right, that then we become slave to, which many of us see with data, reports, meetings, emails. It starts to become this beast and we don't know how we got there. Now, that's unintentional complexity. And I think that's actually the majority of it. There is intentional complexity. People that want to deceive, people that specifically are trying to be cloaked in what they're doing, complex,
right,
because they want to, they want to protect themselves. But most of it is unintentional. And so I think that's a good place to start, which is a lot of the stuff people don't mean to do, but it's the result of what you try and do. And a lot of this is driven by, frankly, very personal human behavior. So why do we want to put all these things in place? To manage risk. Right? We don't want to go to jail.
Yes.
We don't want people to be rogue. We have a fear, right? If I don't get this organized, I could be fired. And some of us have a basic need for control, right? And order. And a lot of those things, again, best intentions, but because of those things, that's why you get the 50-step program with no workaround. the intense reports where the point size is so small on a piece of paper that they literally spend all their time formatting versus thinking, is this necessary? So, you know, that's a couple things to think about, which is intentional versus unintentional. We create the monster often, and we need to stop and think about why. And a lot of it is driven by very personal behaviors. And if we as humans or as leaders can understand the real personal behavior that drives why we do things every day, we can start to let go and have less of this fear and risk and need for control, and simplicity can start to emerge.
Well, you know, I think you've hit on a big key, and that is the why. Why are we doing it this way versus another way? And sometimes, you know, doing it this slightly more complicated way is better, as you said, because it keeps us safe, it keeps us in compliance, we're not polluting as much, or we're disposing of these vital documents the most secure way possible. So as you said, you know, sometimes it's intentional. It has to be this way, as opposed to just throwing stuff out. But I think what you said is so important. People lose the sight of why.
They lose the sight of why. And so I want to be a little provocative here too, which is most people think, you know, let's simplify because complexity is bad. But the real thing about simplification is, if you're a leader, think about this. Simplification is a skill set. It's the most underutilized skill that they have within an organization, and everyone possesses it. But we refuse to unleash it. Why? And that gets back to this risk, fear, and control. But what's interesting is when you think about simplification, if you're a CEO of a company or a leader, it is the right thing to do. And here's why. For your customers, if you simplify, you get more loyalty and retention. We've seen studies that show people will pay a higher price firm more simpler and therefore trustworthy, by the way. The simpler you are often translates into trust, interaction with you. That's one thing. Then it's a better thing. People want to work at a company, right? Employees and the company overall that's simplified has a better retention strategy. You keep people there because they can focus on work that matters. And frankly, I think there's an ethical component here that we overlook. Simplification is the right thing to do because we owe it to each other. You know, why do we get so mad when people waste our money? We don't have the same level of anger when people waste our time. And we need to get to that point where time is, this asset you cannot get back. We need to treat each other's time with more respect because it is absolutely ethically the right thing to do. So simplification has so many benefits. It will drive your culture. Simplification is culture, and culture is the work you do every day. So if the work you're doing every day is the mundane, the complex, your culture is going to be bad. And you could easily change your culture if you can get to that work that matters, and that is achieved through simplification. So I frankly feel, Bert, you can tell I'm really passionate about this, but there's this time now where people are saying, you know what, enough. And we need leadership to step up and say simplification is now – it's an organizational principle for us. This is how we work. And I think that what that could unleash within companies could be tremendous. And it's free.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so stand by. We're going to take a really simple break, and then we'll be right back talking with Lisa Bodell about how simplification wins.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we're back. My first guest, Lisa Bodell, we're talking about simplification, why simple wins. You know, it's interesting too, Lisa, because nobody's ever said, hey, I didn't understand that because it was too simple. Right? Whether you're in the corporate world, the military world, your customers, you mentioned your customers. I thought that was a great point. Nobody's ever said, oh, you know what? I just didn't understand that. It was just too simple. It's always, I just didn't understand. There's too many moving parts. It's too complicated.
Yeah, I mean, 99% of the time, that's correct. And I will say, that's why it's interesting. When we did all our research, and this took me a significant amount of time to write this book. It's probably the most complex thing I've ever done, by the way. There is a load of research on complexity. There's very little on simplicity.
Interesting.
And and that's because I think so few people have gotten it right. There's some myths that I think we should talk about, Bert, which is, you know, people value more. They believe that more is better. And therefore,
yes.
You know, why not more features? Why not longer documents? And, they talk about this myth. There's this great story about the locksmith who was such an expert at cracking locks that he could literally, if you were in a real emergency, come to your house and he could literally unlock something in 30 seconds. And he stopped doing that because people then, when he was done and he did it in 30 seconds, they didn't want to pay him because if they thought he could do it that quickly, it must not be worth very much. And so what this gets to is people, you know, the reason we get in this trap is because we have this wrong perception, right? More does not equal more value. We've all seen, you know, on our cell phones how many features we have that we never use, right?
Right.
It's the same thing with everything. Well, so that's one of the myths. I think the other thing that's really interesting is you can oversimplify. There is a little piece in the book I talk about that, and I'll give you a couple examples, and they are rare, but, you know, that's why you have to put parameters around what simplification is and how you can do it as much as possible. And we can talk about definitions in a second. I think that would be good. But you can also minimize something to a point where it's not understandable anymore. So an example of a client, a legal group, wanting to get their 100-page contracts, right? Why so long? Down to a page. And they did it. And it was so simple that then people had to keep asking for definitions on things because they didn't understand what was left over. They'd stripped away too much. Right? And the corollary I give to people is, you know, anyone that's ever gone to IKEA and tried to put something together with those instructions that are just, they're visually simple, but you have no idea what the hell you're doing and you want marriage counseling afterwards, that's too simple. So, but that's not, that's 99% of the time, to your point, Bert, that's not the case, right? It's
right,
too
that's the exception.
Complex. But here's the other myth, right? People think because it's organized, it's simplified. And that's a big problem, because then they think, oh, I've got it organized. That's a step in the process. But organized doesn't mean simplified. And I use a personal story, by the way. I talk about how, you know, I'm a mother of two, and I spend a lot of time whenever I can on the weekends for driving to different sporting events. And I can't tell you how many carpools have been organized to the point of where I keep getting alerts and changes and email routings, where there's so much communication and routing, right? It would have been easier just to do it alone. So there's a lot of myths that have to be dispelled, right? Which is, you know, just because it can be oversimplified, just because it's organized doesn't mean it's simple, and more is not always better. So we have to change those things and get started.
Well, and you know what? And I want to make this point about the whole more thing. When I think of this more, I think it started, you know, at least for my recall, I think it really took root in the fast food industry, right? For 25 cents, you get more.
Mm.
And so
more.
All of a sudden we have this whole, you know, you could double your meal size for just 25 cents. Forget the fact that you're doubling your caloric intake. Forget that. But you can get more for 25 cents. We want more for our value. We want these massive plates full of food. Therefore, we get our value. And I think that's, you know, that got stuck in our heads where if, you know, I put out digital courses. And for a while there, if your course didn't have like, you know, 2,000 videos, you couldn't get any money for it. And
I then, couldn't agree,
you know,
more.
Right. And so now we've gotten this shift. I think it's coming around, so where people are realizing, I don't need 2,000 videos. If you could simplify it and get it to me in 6 or 8 or 10, I'm down with that. You know, even now on YouTube, you know, taking remember videos used to be very long. Now they've gotten short. Twitter is a great example. We like short. We like brevity, right? So I like this idea. So let me ask you this. Back to the book. The book, by the way, is coming out in October. It's called Why Simple Wins, and I love that
That's
title.
Right.
But let me ask you this. So what was the inspiration behind the book? What was the thing that made you say, okay, I gotta write this?
I love that you asked that. You know, there's two things. The first is personal. I am, you know, like you and many of the listeners here, I am a busy entrepreneur of 20 years, and part of it is a physician, heal thyself. I feel like I have always been very organized so I can take on more. And at some point, you reach a breaking point. I like many probably in their, you know, the age where your children get older, you have a business, and you take on a significant responsibility. I travel a ton. I wanted to figure out, it no longer became the ability to take on more. It was doing the right work, you know, getting to the stuff that mattered. And I wanted to know, how do people go about doing that? And I also thought that I was very good at being organized and being simplified. How could I teach that to people? And so it allowed me to redo some work on me personally, but also then to be able to teach that to organizations. And so let me get to the organizational part, which is, you know, my company, which is called FutureThink, I started it 20 years ago. And we started teaching people, gosh, I want to say just short of 10 years ago, innovation and change. We started with strategy and leadership, and then it morphed into innovation and change as that really took on de rigueur. And I will tell you how frustrating it was, Bert, that so many people asked us to come in and teach change and innovation. And when we got there, they were the biggest barriers to letting us do it. They were the people who said no, they didn't want it, and it was this whole risk, fear, control. And I thought, what the hell is going on? Why won't they let us do it? They say they wanted us here. They're paying us money. Why can't this stick? You know, I'm a teacher by trade. This is what I do. I teach adults, and I want to know how to make this stuff stick. It wasn't working. And I asked a simple question. This was really fascinating to me. Starting a couple years ago, I started asking a question of people that really hit it home for me of why simplicity is really what I need to be doing, not innovation. Because I started asking people, what do you spend your day doing? And I will tell you that regardless of the company, the culture, the level within the organization, everybody answered the exact same way. What do they spend their day doing? Meetings and emails. Now, I'm there to teach innovation. And what do they do all day? They do meaningless work. Really, no one gets up every morning and is pumped up to do meetings and emails.
Right.
So we had to spend time getting rid of the stuff that wasn't working to make space for things that mattered. And that got to simplification. So I have to say, it was a revelation for me. People are spending their time doing stuff that really doesn't move the needle at all. And that has to change. And it's going to happen through simplification. You're going to start to see it a lot now that you've heard about it from me.
I love it. I love it. And you're absolutely right. Nobody says, oh, man, I hope I have 100 emails to respond to today. That would be great.
Yeah,
they
should see a therapist.
Right?
Yeah. Can you imagine? I use this. I actually did a TED Talk a while ago, and I said, can you imagine being that person that wakes up in the morning is like, God, I really feel popular, right? So many people have emailed me today. That is not what they're saying. They're cursing you for emailing you today. So we need to – it's interesting. If you're a leader, there's some things we have to start to do to realize how to change this behavior and think about what's really important. Because if you're thinking meetings and emails are important, you shouldn't be in the job that you have.
I love it. We're going to end on that note. Lisa Bodell, I'd love to bring you back and talk more about why simple wins. The book is coming out in October. Lisa, thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me. A lot of fun, Bird.
You bet. Good stuff there about why simple wins, how simplification, as she said, it's a culture, it's a mindset. And maybe you can look around and start thinking what you can do to simplify your life, your business, everything. Simple wins. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick.
Oh, yeah.
Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
I resist.
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are rocking and we are rolling. My next two guests are Josh Gold, a senior director at AEG Global Partnership. Josh Gold is responsible for driving revenue growth for a number of AEG live top tours and musical festivals such as Firefly and the New Orleans Jazz Heritage Festival. In addition, Josh also works with AEG Sports and Facilities Division, facilitating partnerships tied to the LA Galaxy, LA Kings, and Staples Center. Also joining us is, where did he go? it was right here. Oh, Jeffrey Schweig. Jeffrey is the co-founder and president of Alchemy 3. He runs the full-service marketing agency, which specializes in the gaming industry with a focus on lotteries, reward programs, and mobile app development. Gentlemen, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you.
It's good to be here, Bert.
All right, so let's talk about this. How did this partnership come about?
Well, we had been working with AEG on another lottery-related project, and Josh asked if we would consider partnering on an opportunity in Texas. While the original concept we presented wouldn't work from an executional perspective, the lottery really loved the idea of partnering with AEG and doing a fully integrated music-centric game and promotion. AEG and A3 went back to and put our heads together, and we gave birth to a program which we call Texas Lottery Live.
Texas Lottery Live. All right, so this partnership includes the Texas Lottery Commission then?
That's right. You know, it's an ongoing partnership that AEG and Alchemy 3 have. Our first client to launch the program is the Texas Lottery.
Gotcha. Okay. So for consumers, you know, what is this event all about?
Well, what it is it's a lottery. It all focuses on a lottery scratch game, an instant ticket. In addition to having the opportunity to win cash prizes like you can on other scratch games, this particular game offers second chance opportunities to win music-centric prizes, and those are the prizes that are designed and put together by AEG.
Gotcha. All right, so Josh, why don't you tell me, how is this different than, let's say, other lottery partnerships?
Sure. Well, I think Texas saw an opportunity to really reach a younger demographic who are attracted to music, and music certainly has a very young appeal and is a passion point for the younger generation today. So Texas saw an opportunity that ourselves and Alchemy 3 brought to them and really stepped up, and, you know, it was a very forward-thinking lottery and saw an opportunity to develop a ticket where they could give their lottery players a second chance to win opportunities and experiences at some of the top festivals around the country, which our group puts on and produces. And so the partnership was able to be put together.
I love it. So let me ask you this, guys. Is this the future for lottery programs? I mean, what do you guys see trending? Is this going to be like the, you know, what do you call it, the era of new partnerships when it comes to these lottery games?
Well, I believe that lotteries are becoming more sophisticated in the programs that they put together. It has to be so much more than just the gaming experience now. They're looking for multi-tiered programs, you know, some that will captivate the core player who's playing for the gaming experience, but they know that they have to grow their audiences and reach above and beyond. You know, doing a music-centric program, as Josh alluded to, it does attract a different type of audience, an infrequent player, a lapsed player, definitely a younger player. So I think that's where lotteries are going now. They're trying to create these very integrated programs that will truly attract you know, new audiences.
Yeah, and okay, so have you guys had your first event? How did it go, or is it scheduled?
Well, there's really a couple of different components to the program. The first is what Josh mentioned, awarding these music festival prizes as part of the game. And then there's also an overlay program where the lottery is sponsoring a concert series. And these are to the venues throughout the state of Texas. And consumers will be able to win via social media tickets to these concerts that take place in Texas as well. So really the whole program just launched in March, and the prizes, be it from the concert series or prizes in the game, will start being awarded, you know, in the next month or so.
Gotcha. All right. So out of curiosity, I am from Texas. You guys didn't know that, but why Texas?
That's a really great question. You know, Texas is a very, They're kind of pioneering when it comes to doing these types of programs. They, you know, with Texas and music, you know, is synonymous. And the Texas Lottery, they like to incorporate games and programs that appeal to infrequent players and can attract the non-players. They also like to include games that will attract the younger adult audience who may not consider playing the lottery otherwise. So the director, Gary Grief, and his executive staff felt like the Texas Lottery Live instant game and concert series really had the propensity to accomplish all of this. We believe it's a formula for success, and we've already started to have discussions with other lotteries about adopting the program as well.
And you know what? And again, this is a great idea, especially you mentioned some of the great marketing benefits. You get somebody who has been inactive or lapsed. You get new players. You get people who are in it to not just win money, but in this case, win prizes, or maybe they want a different level of, what do you call it, of gamemanship or activity. So it really wins on multiple levels. And as Josh mentioned, is this whole music thing that really inspires a lot of people. People can get excited about music. Yes, you can get excited about, quote, maybe winning the lottery, right? But you can always get passionate about the music.
That's right. That's right. And lotteries have dipped their toe in the water before with music-type programs, but they haven't been very successful. They've, awarded downloadable music. They've done talent-specific games like, you know, Aerosmith and Kiss. But really, I think the lotteries are looking for, when it comes to music, it has to be very broad-based because, you know, music interests are so varied across the board by age, by demographic, and this program accomplishes all of that. It really delivers on, you know, all the audiences that could potentially be playing the game.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. All right. So from start to finish, from the time that you and Josh had this idea to the time that you've now executed it, how long did that take? What was the incubation period?
Josh, do you want to?
Yeah, I think like anything good, it takes a little bit of time. So I think Jeffrey and I first started having discussions, I would say probably about 6-9 months ago. And then, you know, as he alluded, the program took shape and reshaped and then, you know, now developed to what it is today where we launched. So I'd say, you know, certainly it's probably a 6-9 month window from, you know, our first conversation to when we were able to put everything together.
Wow, that's actually much quicker than I thought. I thought you were going to tell me a year, year and a half, simply because, A, it is a big project, and B, you have a municipality involved or a state government involved, and sometimes those wheels tend to move slowly, right? You have to go through all these committees, and it's got to be approved and then taken up to the next committee. So, you know, 6-9 months is actually pretty dang fast. But I'm glad what you said there, Josh, that like most things that are good, they do take time. And sometimes, especially young entrepreneurs, are in a hurry. And they want to, you know, they want to have it now, and they're looking for shortcuts. And sometimes the shortcut is just slow and steady progress. It takes a lot of hard work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that you had a number of entities that all came together to make this program happen, and, you know, all saw the vision from the beginning on what ultimately this could mean for lottery players, you know, around the state of Texas. And as Jeffrey said, you know, the broad appeal that music offers a number of demographics. So, you know, with AEG being involved in all different genres of music, we were able to really put together a complete program that, you know, completed the vision of what we all saw and what we all wanted to build together. And once that was done, you know, all entities continue to work hand in hand to get it done.
Sure. Now, let me ask you guys this real quick. Did you guys know each other before putting this deal together? In other words, did you guys work together? How did you guys know each other?
Long lost brothers. we look alike too.
We actually worked together on a smaller project, lottery related, and then we felt like there was a good connection. Josh and I had been in touch with each other, and then we sat down and said, you know, how can we bring music, you know, really full blown to the lottery industry? And that's when the opportunity came up with Texas. So it's really evolved into a very solid relationship. We're so looking forward to moving forward with this. And like I said, there are a lot of lotteries that have already expressed interest in it. They love the program that we're doing in Texas.
Sure. No, I can see that because as we've talked about, it really brings a different layer of activity, and it's kind of a fun way to promote the project you know, that's going to involve different people and different activities. So I think it's a win-win. It's a fun way to reinvigorate kind of an old model, if you will, right? An old brand.
Very much so. Very much so. And that's what, you know, that's what Alchemy 3 does. We take very popular brands and we turn them into themes for lottery games. And in addition to winning cash prizes, we award merchandise and experiential prizes that tie to the theme of that game. So we're making it more than just a gambling slash gaming concept. It really becomes an experience for the player.
I love it. I love it. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to have you back again and get an update as to the success of this experience. And if people want to know more about this, do they go to the Texas State Lottery website? Where do they go to find out more about your go ahead.
Yes. They can go to txlottery.org.
txlottery.org, and they can find out all the details about the music and the prizes and everything else.
That's
Josh
right.
Gold and Jeffrey Schwag, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks for having us.
Good stuff there. Very interesting. And again, what we see here is we see some innovation in kind of an old model by adding just music. So music has been such an innovative, such an inspirational element to a lot of things. I mean, if you've ever seen a great movie, you take away the music and it changes the quality of that movie. So I think that we're going to see some changes here with the Texas State Lottery. Looking forward to having these guys back again as they update us on the success. Anything is possible if you're willing to do the hard work that it takes. I say this because I've had the pleasure of interviewing some of the most successful people in the world. I mean, Hugh Jackman, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Paul Hoffman, or Jeff Hoffman, you know, CEOs from all sorts of different parts of the world, different levels of success, Bill Bartman, John Kasich, a politician, and the shortcut, the secret that they have drilled home to me is that there is no shortcut other than hard work. Hard work, perseverance, resistance. Persistence breaks down resistance, and that's how you achieve success. That's how you make things happen. That's how you become an influencer. That is how you get in the magazines. That's how you get the books written about you. That's how you leave a legacy. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.